From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, an update on news and events from the Latin America Caribbean region with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo. So, Vice President Pence was in Colombia.
Yeah, and Pence is on a visit that was scheduled some time ago, as far as I understand, to Colombia, Chile, Argentina, and I think Peru. It seems to me there are very clearly several aspects to his visit. The most immediate one, of course, is to reinforce the United States government's support for pressure against Venezuela of some kind or another. And, of course, last week, President Trump made his notorious announcement that the military option, he didn't discard the military option for intervening in Venezuela to overthrow the government of Nicolas Maduro, the legitimately elected government.
Right. Yeah, I've seen some speculation here also that if the U.S. militarily intervenes, that they might use Colombia's military as a proxy.
Oh, yeah, have we not discussed that? And I think we've discussed that in the past as a possibility.
Yeah.
I don't think that the Colombian army would...
They're not up to it, right?
I don't think that they're not up to it, but I don't think that they'd get directly involved in that kind of intervention. I think that what they'd use is paramilitary forces and try and dress them up somehow as a non-governmental response. You know, a kind of outburst of popular outrage in support of their sisters and brothers in Venezuela, something along those lines.
Yeah, which is interesting that this might come at right after the disarming of FARC.
Well, yeah, and I think you and I also mentioned that aspect of the peace process, that what it does is remove a crucial military actor, opening up the way for Colombia to be completely free should it get involved in some kind of military intervention in Venezuela.
Right.
So there's that aspect has all been one of some concern, I'm sure, for progressive governments in the region, in particular, of course, Venezuela. But they supported that because they believed that Venezuela's Comandante Hugo Chavez Frias, who led Venezuela for, 14 years?
Yeah, 14 years.
From 1999 to his untimely death in 2013. He made the peace talks possible, encouraging both sides to try and talk despite their extreme differences. And in the end, his and Fidel Castro's initiative worked. But I think it was hijacked. The agenda has now been hijacked as one of neutralizing the FARC rather than building regional integration, which was the basis on which Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez promoted the peace talks.
Right.
Because all the other progressive leaders in the region wanted to make Latin America a region of peace. And it was interesting that theme, that the region is a peaceful region, was one actually taken up by Juan Manuel Santos in his declarations following his meetings with Mike Pence, because he said that he did not favor a military intervention. And he stated that he'd explained to Pence that Colombia, along with various other right-wing governments in the region, who've been very vocal and active in promoting sanctions, economic and diplomatic sanctions against Venezuela. For example, the governments in Mercosur, who suspended Venezuela from Mercosur quite illegally a couple of weeks ago, was it 10 days ago, something like that.
Yeah, a week and a half, yeah.
So that right-wing block of opinion knows that supporting any kind of U.S. intervention, but especially a military intervention, does not go down well with voters in Latin America. And I think it's it's difficult to know how sincere Santos is about peace, because he has played a key role in making possible the peace agreement in Colombia, but he's then proceeded to manipulate that peace both nationally and internationally for his own narrow political sectarian ends. So, and having said that, it remains the case that no Latin American government is in favor of U.S. military intervention in the continent. At least that's what they say.
Right.
So Mauricio Macri has said it, Kuczynski in Peru has said it, Bachelet in Chile has said it, Peña Nieto in Mexico has confirmed that all these right-wing governments have explicitly said that they object to and reject the idea of that President Trump floated of a military intervention in Venezuela. And I think in many ways, and Trump's, I don't know why people continually refer to Trump as an idiot, because it seems to me that he's an extremely astute individual.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't have got to be president if he weren't.
Yeah, right.
And so when he does this, he throws out these ideas, these are often outrageous ideas. And what he's doing there, in part, he's sounding out opinion. But in this case, I think he knew what the opinion is, because his diplomatic team are in constant touch with the opinion at the highest level throughout Latin America and the Caribbean. And they know, it seems to me this has been a kind of orchestrated, theatrical kind of...
Like a dance.
And so Trump knows that everybody's going to reject the idea of military intervention. But domestically, it allows him to pacify individuals like Marco Rubio and other very powerful right-wing individuals who are extremely hostile to Venezuela and have called for military intervention there. So domestically, he's covering his back by looking tougher than he really wants to be. But externally, he now has the alibi that all his right-wing allies in the region are saying, well, don't intervene.
And he actually is inducing that. I mean, that's the... You know, I agree with you. My opinion is, and having watched his career... way before he, ran for president for many years. One of the strengths of the organization that he's the face of, regardless of, I don't know who actually does the brain work there, but one of the real talents that they have is their ability to really get a grasp on the ground game when they go into a place. I live in Ossining, New York, which is in Westchester County, which the history of it is it was a prison town. You know, it's now, because it's 30 miles from Manhattan, it's now kind of like a somewhat yuppified, bedroom community, more than the blue-collar roots it originally had. But it's a little more blue-collar than most of Westchester. And next to us, we have both Croton to the north, which is... more upscale, and the village of Briarcliff Manor to the south of us, which is very upscale. And each of those places, if you were to try to, say, build a deck on the back of your house, it's a nightmare. You need 12 lawyers, you go through the planning board, the zoning board of appeals, etc., and chances are it's going to be rejected. He went into each of these places and built over the code massive golf courses. Normally, you would have protests, 1,000 people coming to village board meetings, bringing rope and everything. And instead, because they worked the ground game so well, not only did they get approvals, but everybody in town, more or less, was on board with it. And so they go in and, in my opinion, and I've seen, how they, some of the work that they do, they go in and gauge opinion, very, very deftly. And they work it. And so when I hear people say that they're stupid, that Trump is stupid, and when I hear him say things like he's being clumsy with this or that, I'm mindful of the 20 or 30 years I've been watching him do this other thing and having won the campaign with almost, a surgeon's precision, the way they went right after what they needed to get in. And what you just said is an example to me of exactly that. Okay, yeah. I have to satisfy Rubio and Cruz and all these other crazies and keep a part of my base that's part of the traditional Republican base that wants to hear this. On the other hand, I don't want to do it. And so what am I going to do? I'm going to induce this reaction by saying some crazy stuff that's going to make people say, we ain't doing that. And that's it. And here we are. Yeah. And I hope that's what the end game is with Venezuela, too, by the way.
Well, yeah, the disturbing thing about Pence's meeting is that the fundamentally disturbing thing about what's going on, in particular this meeting by Pence, is that what they seem to be doing is they seem to be building up a right-wing bloc that goes far beyond. Just for example, the Pacific Alliance countries, which are Mexico, Colombia, Peru, and Chile,
right.
which have been working to try and promote a neoliberal free market, ha-ha style,
right.
Regional economic and trade policy. And they've gone much further than that now. And it's difficult to gauge how much of a threat that is to the overall unity of the key geopolitical triumph of the progressive governments that were in power in Latin America between 2006 and 2013, say, 2014, 2015, which was the CELAC, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States. And that is historically a major achievement, uniting all of Latin America and the Caribbean as a single block of countries with a single voice. Now, I don't think that the idea is to destroy CELAC. I don't think that they're trying to split it apart and make it disappear. And I think what they're trying to do is to co-opt a majority of countries in CELAC so that they no longer promote an agenda of emancipation and independence and a sovereignty and autonomy. I think that is the underlying geopolitical aim, if you like. And in response to that, and as John Pilger and others have said, and Venezuela is absolutely key to prevent that.
Right. And, you know, Venezuela was key in constructing this thing in the first place. I mean, you know, you really saw this grouping of progressive governments get going when Venezuela, when Venezuela rose with Chavez, you started to see all this other activity, the support that was given by Venezuela. You know, of course, this is Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution and all of that have been toughing it out for a half a century. But it really got rolling with Chavez and Venezuela, and the attack on that, you know, they peeled away Argentina in one election, and they've been peeling away Brazil with the impeachment and all the nonsense going there. There was the coup in Paraguay, the coup in Honduras, and you know, this the construct of this other Pacific group and what's going on right now, that's kind of the, you know, the oppositional response to what started really in 1998 in earnest.
Right. Now, so at an international level, it's still an open question how successful they're going to be with that attempt to co-opt CELAC via their right-wing allies. But internally inside Venezuela, the situation from the point of view of the Venezuelan government looks not bad at all at the moment, because they managed to get a tremendous legitimate validation from the people of Venezuela with the vote for the Constituent National Assembly. Over 8 million people voted in it.
Yep.
Against what independent observers reckon was probably a maximum of 4 million people that voted in the July 16th opposition so-called plebiscite.
And that's by a stretch, really. There are a lot of things that militate against that number in terms of evidence. But yeah,
yeah. But on let's be charitable. Even if that top estimate by independent polling companies like Hinterlaser's is true, and they're still a mile behind the support that they have that the Venezuelan people have given their legitimately elected democratic government.
Yeah, double. You know, 8-4. Yeah.
So I know. And so what that Constituent Assembly is able to do, the Constituent Assembly, because it is the supreme representation of the sovereign voice of Venezuela's people, both the president and other powers of state, because in Venezuela, the electoral authority is a separate power of state. The electoral authority, they both explicitly said that they submit to the authority of the Constituent Assembly. Mm-hmm. And because it has that authority, the Constituent Assembly has been able to, for example, issue a law or decree or whatever the correct term is, bringing forward the regional elections that were scheduled for December originally in the electoral calendar of the Venezuela's National Electoral Tribunal or Council. So those regional elections have now been brought forward a couple of months. Yeah. They've appointed a new attorney general to replace Luis Ortega, who turned out to be a pawn of the opposition and deliberately she lied about the legitimacy of magistrates that she has, whose appointment she herself had formally signed, although she denied that she signed it.
Right.
She did, and also she was negligent in her duties by failing to prosecute very clear crimes, especially hate crimes, by the Venezuelan opposition.
Yep.
And so the Constituent Assembly dismissed her and appointed a new attorney general who is now trying to catch up with all the legal work that Luis Ortega let slip in order to give the opposition a free pass with their violent demonstrations and a disruption of normal life in Venezuela over the last 3 months.
Yeah.
those two developments are very important, but an even more important development is that all the opposition parties, bar one or two very small fractions of the United Opposition Front, which is called the United Democratic Table, MUD, by its Spanish acronym.
Right.
And all of those opposition parties have agreed to participate in the elections. And they've even, one of the most important parties making up that coalition has even felt it necessary to say that they don't want a US military intervention.
Right.
Now, what that means is that the opposition, in effect, by participating in the elections, in the regional elections that have now been brought forward to October, are essentially admitting the legitimacy of the government in a very specific way,
mm-hmm.
the very legitimacy that they say that they've been saying over the last 100 days they reject.
I mean, they're forced to. The reality of it is that, I mean, what this means, what it reifies is, in essence, the fact that the people of Venezuela hold the government as being legitimate. And consequently, if they're going to engage the government of Venezuela, they have to do it on those terms, or they, in turn, will not be recognized as legitimate by the people of Venezuela.
Yeah, I should imagine that the Venezuelan opposition are extremely concerned about what's going to happen in the October elections. Because... Yeah. And they've lost so much credibility as a result of their outrageous campaign of attacking the very Venezuelan people that they say they want to defend.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like these organizations like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch and all of them. You know, the International Federation for Human Rights is at the FIDH that's based in France. All of these organizations, as various people have pointed out, in particular Corey Morningstar, have pointed out, they purport to act in defense of the people they say they care about, in this case Venezuela. But the results of their actions, especially in Venezuela's case, spreading opposition propaganda, supporting their violence, their violent campaign to stage what in effect is a slow motion coup against Venezuela's legitimate government. The effect of the propaganda spread by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch and all the other organizations is actually to worsen the situation of people in Venezuela. Right. And we've seen that in, you know, where so many countries in Libya and Syria, all these organizations working in support of United States and allied government propaganda and the propaganda of the corporate elites that control those governments, they're actually working against the well-being of the peoples of the world, despite their avowals of support for human rights. And yeah, and that is also the dilemma internally in Venezuela of the Venezuelan opposition, and that it's likely to lead to a significant loss of electoral support that we'll see in those elections in October.
Yep.
So then, and that's the situation in Venezuela. Another point that may be worth noting is that the Venezuelan authorities have made 18 arrests and recovered something like a third of the armaments that were stolen in the attack on a military depot a couple of weeks ago, in which a couple of people were killed. And that too indicates that the Venezuelan authorities are very much in control of the security situation in Venezuela.
Right, that's right. The military and the police, and even though with the police there's some contradictions because of the nature of the local, you know, relationship to the police, but and you know, the fact that the opposition has, you know, strongholds concentrated in certain areas, the more upscale areas, and so the relationship between the police and the government,
also particularly along in the border regions,
that too, right,
between Venezuela and Colombia, where Colombian paramilitaries were very active trying to sabotage the election to the National Constituent Assembly.
And you had all that smuggling and everything going on too. Yeah.
Can we talk a bit more about the Pence's visit? And
sure.
He's going to a couple of countries, Chile and Peru, where the government is very much up against popular protest. In Peru, there's been a long strike by teachers who are demanding better terms and conditions that Kuczynski promised them during his election campaign, which was about 18 months ago, I think.
Mm-hmm,
yeah. I can't remember when he took power. Pence is going to be talking to Kuczynski, and they'll probably talk about Venezuela, but they'll probably also talk about Bolivia, about the growing role of China in terms of its infrastructure support, its economic support, its their trade relations with China. They'll probably talk about the attempt to revive the Trans-Pacific Partnership that's currently going on, and of which the Pacific Alliance countries are very keen supporters. So they'll probably be talking about quite a broad agenda, but they'll be talking about it against a domestic backdrop that is not favorable for Kuczynski, and his approval ratings have dropped a lot, although to nothing like the minimal levels of Julius Temerin, the usurper president in Brazil.
Well, zero is a tough number to beat.
Yes, zero is a tough number to beat. So then, and then he'll also be visiting Chile with probably a very similar agenda, economics, trade, and the situation vis-a-vis Venezuela. But when he gets to Argentina, and that's going to be a very interesting, let's see what comes out of that visit and his talks with Mauricio Macri. Now, yesterday in Argentina, they had the preliminary elections for legislative elections. When I say preliminary, it's a kind of primary
right.
Process. And there are legislative elections for a certain percentage. I think it's about a third of the legislature and a certain number of the Senate, because that, That's kind of those the elections for those posts are staggered.
They rotate it, yeah. They stagger it, yeah.
But the election that was very, very strange. For the first time for years, there was a long delay in the announcement of the provisional results. And as far they've probably been announced now, but I know the latest that I saw was that the right wing candidate, who was the former minister for internal affairs, I think it's a woman called Bullrich, was closely tied with Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, but that's very suspicious because normally in Argentina the provisional results are announced like something like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night, the latest kind of midnight, and the provisional results have been held back. They started being held back when it was clear that Cristina Kirchner was taking the lead.
Right.
So there's a lot of suspicion about that. If you look at the headlines for Página 12, for example, the main centre-left media outlet in Argentina, they're expressing extreme suspicion about that unprecedented delay in the announcement of the results.
Yeah, it was very suspicious. And right at this moment, we're talking Monday, a little after 9 a.m. New York time, it says 95%+ of votes counted in Buenos Aires showed essentially that Bullrich and Fernandez were tied at 34.19 for Bullrich and 34.11% to Fernandez. So they're neck and neck.
Yeah, but the significance of that is for the Mauricio Macri government, the significance of that is that 60% of people voted against them.
Right.
Because the other party led by Sergio Massa, kind of social democrat Peronist, he's a more center right than whereas. Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and her section of Peronism is more kind of centre-left. And to put it in those terms, which I never really helpful, but as shorthand, maybe that helps people understand the difference. But Sergio Massa has played the historic role of social democrats, which is to hold the door open for the right.
Right.
I think he got something like whatever it was, and 15% of the vote, between 10 and 15% of the vote, and so what that means is that Mauricio Macri has suffered a massive political rejection.
Right.
And I'm old enough to remember the election in 1980. Was it 1982, in which Margaret Thatcher won following the Malvinas War, what some people call the Falklands War.
Right.
And in that election, and that has always been used as the historic election to prove that the left wing will never take power. Mm. Jeremy Corbyn has demonstrated the falsity of that.
Right.
But in that election, the Social Democrat Party, the SDLP at that time, the SDP at that time, was the party that has played exactly the same role that Sergio Massa is now playing in Argentina. Mm. Because they divided the progressive vote and made it possible for Thatcher to win, which he otherwise wouldn't have done.
Yep.
So now that we're seeing that same process happen in Argentina, and it's an open question as to how far these provisional primary votes voting results are going to be borne out in the real legislative elections that are going to be held. I think it's the end of October,
yeah. And I think after the vote count comes in this week, we'll be in a better position next week to discuss this further. Tony, thank you very much. We are at the end of our time, unfortunately, and look forward to speaking with you again next week.
Okay, likewise, Don. Look forward to it.
Thanks. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.